This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, before we get into the actual news, which is what we're going to be discussing today, I wanted to mention that we published an oral history of Spider-Man 2's train scene that I spent several months working on sort of off and on in between other Slash Film projects and stuff like that. I got to talk to Alfred Molina, who played Doc Ock in the movie, so that was really cool, and interview a bunch of folks who worked on that scene, and I think it turned out really well. So I just wanted to mention that. It got published over the weekend, and I hope it just didn't get lost in like all the scrum of CinemaCon and all that stuff, but I wanted to highlight it here. And then I wanted also to I guess, give some space for you to talk a little bit about your Inside Out stuff that's going up right now, too.
Yeah, so I went to Pixar back in March to check out an early press day for the animated sequel Inside Out 2, and they showed us 35 minutes of the movie, the entire first act of the film, basically. And it's the same footage that they also showed at CinemaCon, so actually our own Ryan Scott got to see that as well. So it was very cool to get a sense of where this sequel is going and what it's doing. And you can read my full footage reaction, like for a more in-depth reaction. But basically, I'm really pleased with like how it's going so far. It kind of picks up where the last one left off. But Riley's becoming a teenager. She's 13 years old. She's starting to go through puberty. As we've seen in the trailers, some new emotions arrive, and there are some developments inside Riley's mind that have already taken place in between the movies, where she has a belief system as far as the things that she believes based on certain experiences in her life, as well as a sense of self, believing that she's a good friend and things like that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she got like red pilled on YouTube or something.
And so that's kind of like the what joy and the rest of the core emotions are now all about protecting. So when the new emotions like anxiety show up and they start to kind of wreak havoc and ruin Riley's belief system and sense of who she is by kind of betraying herself because she feels insecure and all that, it really shakes things up and provides a cool story for Riley to, you know, evolve as a character, and also for the emotions to like figure out how to work together. So it's really cool. It's very, very funny. I also wrote a separate article about a couple new characters that we have not seen or met in any of the marketing yet that they showed us, and they're not emotions, and they're a lot of fun. They incorporate two very different animation styles, and so be sure to check that out if you want to know a little more about a couple other cool scene-stealing characters that will be on the way this summer.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm going to link to your footage reaction in the show notes here, but I encourage people to go to Slash Film and just scroll through and check out Brad's articles about Inside Out 2. All right, I wanted to start this episode by talking about a few news items that dropped during CinemaCon last week, and Ryan actually mentioned these in his whirlwind recap of his convention experience on yesterday's episode, but I thought they deserved a little bit more discussion than what we had time for yesterday. So first up, Edgar Wright's The Running Man remake is going to star internet boyfriend and handsome man Glenn Powell, is what our headline is on Slash Film. Have you seen the 1987 version of The Running Man, Brad?
I actually haven't. It's one of the few Schwarzenegger movies that I haven't seen.
Okay. Chris Evangelista wrote the news story for us, and he's a big Stephen King fan, and this is based on a Stephen King book. Well, technically, I guess it was written under the Richard Bachman pen name, but Stephen King wrote it nonetheless. And Chris, you know, he's a big Stephen King guy. He mentioned that the Schwarzenegger movie was actually just a very loose adaptation of the original novel, and Chris suspects that this version is going to hew much closer to the actual events of the book and the tone of the book, which is apparently much more dark than what we see in that original film, which I only saw, I think, one time. It was not really a movie that was really in my rotation growing up or anything. I just remember it having, like, really ridiculous costumes and production design and being very heightened and very much like a classic kind of Arnold in a scenario where he's just like fighting off guys the entire time, you know, like a pure Schwarzenegger action movie. So it's interesting to me that Glenn Powell is cast here because, you know, he's got stuff like Twisters coming up and Richard Linklater's Hitman. Presumably he'll be maybe like running around a little bit in those movies. And he's been in stuff like Top Gun Maverick. And I think he was in another airplane movie called Devotion, where he basically was like sitting in a cockpit the whole time. But The Running Man is going to be like our first real look at Glenn Powell, action star. So I was curious if you had any thoughts about him and how you think he might fit into sort of a classic action space.
I have a feeling he probably has all of the right elements to make that work. First of all, he's like, you know, one of the most handsome people on the planet. So, you know, right there, that just says action star. He's totally ripped. If you've seen Top Gun Maverick or Anyone But You, you know that he's absolutely got the body to pull it off. but he just has a great personality too, and I could easily see him being thoroughly entertaining and very cool to watch. And the fact that this is an Edgar Wright movie only gets me more interested, because Edgar Wright is one of those filmmakers who has just free reign to do whatever he wants, and I will immediately be there buying a ticket. So I'm very curious to watch Edgar Wright's kind of career continue, because he started to veer into darker territory. You know, he started off with these comedic movies that were cross genres with, you know, horror and sci-fi and whatnot. Baby Driver took him in a little bit more of an action direction. And then Last Night in Soho kind of took him to this dark thriller territory without really any comedy. And so I feel like that, you know, The Running Man will probably have some, you know, brief moments of levity in it, but I feel like this continues his trend of kind of veering into slightly more, for lack of a better word, serious material.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Speaking of somewhat serious material, there is an R-rated live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Last Ronin movie. And I have not read this, but I think I remember you coming on this podcast and sort of praising the, I believe it was a comic book, right? The Last Ronin is based on a comic book, and I think you read that and you were hyping that up. So tell me about this story.
Yeah, so IDW Publishing is the company that has been publishing new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics over the years, and they've done a lot of cool stuff. And in the past few years, The Last Ronin has been one that garnered a lot of attention. It was a huge hit for them, and that's largely because it tells such a cool story. The concept of The Last Ronin is basically this. There is one last surviving turtle of the four original turtle brothers. And in the first issue, you don't know who that last surviving turtle is. They keep the identity secret. And I won't tell you here in case you want to go and read it yourself. And so by the end of the first issue, you know who that last surviving turtle is. But the entire story tells through flashbacks how the other three turtles came to die and like what happened. And it's this like kind of somewhat post-apocalyptic dystopian version of New York City where like Shredder's grandson is in charge of this criminal empire. There's these synthetic robot ninjas called Singes that like patrol the city. There's a lot of really cool stuff in this story, and it's dark, it's gritty, and so the fact that they're doing an R-rated live action version intrigues me greatly. I'm just wondering exactly what their approach is, because to me, the coolest thing to do would be to tie this into the original live action franchise. Now, granted, those movies got sillier as they went on, because the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie has some silliness to it, but it also has some grounded grit to it. It's a very interesting like relic of the 90s. the second movie, Secret of the Ooze, gets a little goofier because the animated series brought them to a more family-friendly audience, and so they felt they had to make the turtles more cartoonish, even more than the first. And the third one just gets even more silly because of time travel and traveling back to feudal Japan and whatnot. So I think it would be cool if they pulled like a Halloween or something like that and tied this new movie into the original live-action Ninja Turtles and figured out a way to bring back the Jim Henson puppetry and all that stuff, because I would, that would be incredible.
Yeah. So, I mean, my big takeaway from this is that, like, this kind of seems like a risky move, you know, like especially the live action component of it, like the expanding the turtles lore into an R-rated story like this, that is, has that sort of futuristic vibe that you mentioned, that alone feels risky, but the live action component just feels like a really big swing. And I'm curious if you think it's risky in a good way or risky in a way where you're like, oh man, I don't know, they might be biting off more than they can chew here.
I think a little column A, a little column B, because when you go back and look at the box office success of Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem that came out last year, it was pretty successful, but it was by no means like this massive runaway hit. You know, it wasn't as big as like a Pixar movie or a DreamWorks movie or something like that. So they're immediately reducing that audience, which was family friendly, to an R-rated audience. And R-rated movies are a hard sell already. So take that into account with what is, you could say is maybe a more niche property these days. You know, I do wonder how well it'll do at the box office. But for me, I'm just glad that they're taking a shot and doing it like this, because I never would have thought that they ever would have tried to do an adaptation of Last Ronin, let alone one that is both R-rated and live action. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, so speaking of R-rated things, the Scary Movie franchise is getting brought back from the dead. It's been a long time. I think 2013 was the last Scary Movie film that came out. And now Paramount is teaming up with Miramax to resurrect this franchise. Production starts this fall, and the new movie is going to be in theaters next year. Neil H. Moritz, who is the producer of like the Fast and Furious movies, is going to be producing this, and we don't really know anything else much about it. Like, there's no director or writer or anything officially attached here. But as our resident comedy guy, Brad, do you think that the comedy world will be better off with more Scary Movie films, or did this announcement have you sort of, I don't know, rolling your eyes in a way?
I think it kind of hinges on who they get to direct, because parodies these days are very hard to pull off. And the Scary Movie franchise started off really strong. That original Scary Movie is great. I don't think Scary Movie 2 quite holds up very well, but I know there are a lot of people who really enjoy it. And there are aspects of Scary Movie 3 that I really liked, because they brought in Zucker from the Airplane and Naked Gun movies to take the helm of that. And they brought it Leslie Nielsen, and they had some fun gags. And so there's even things to enjoy about that. I'm not even sure I actually saw Scary Movie 4 or 5, because I felt like it kind of started to exhaust itself. And it was like they were arriving during the midst of like a lot of those really bad parodies from Friedberg and Seltzer. So I don't know. Like, I feel like if they were able to get someone like, you know, David Wayne or Michael Showalter to do it, like, especially after how great They Came Together was, which is a fantastic parody of romantic comedies, if you haven't seen it, with Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler. But spoofs are just there. It's hard to do them right these days. And it really takes a special kind of comedic mind to make them work, because like you, as Mel Brooks has proven many times before, you have to have like a reverence for those movies and not just fill them with like these timely gags that reference, you know, tabloids and like current things in that are happening in pop culture, which is a big problem that happened with a lot of those parody movies from the mid 2000s forward. So I think a lot of it will depend on the filmmakers involved. And like, at the very least, I'm curious to see what they can do, but I'm not necessarily optimistic.
Yeah, there was stuff like Meet the Spartans and Epic Movie and Superhero Movie and stuff like that that were coming out at, in sort of that late stage of the Scary Movie reign, if you want to call it that. And yeah, it sort of contributed to this really muddled feel of like an overabundance, basically, of these parody spoof movies. And, you know, the thing about it, Brad, is like horror always seems like it's ripe for parody to me. And especially because the last one of these movies came out so long ago, the idea of what horror movies are right now and the dominant strand of what horror movies are in the industry feels like there's so much room to play with now. Like, you can do an entire movie, I think, that only parodies A24 style horror films, and there's like plenty of material there. So it's not necessarily that like the idea is bad on the face of it. And I'm just feel like really conflicted about this, because part of me is hoping that, you know, this new version like gets rid of all of the dumb bullshit that you were talking about with bringing in, you know, tabloid stars and like people who are reality stars of the moment and whatever, and like tries to actually give us a little bit more of a focused approach at whatever the story they're trying to tell is.
Yeah.
But I also kind of feel like these movies were made specifically to give teenagers something to do at the mall at their local multiplex. And like, who am I to say that like every generation doesn't deserve their own like sort of brainless excuse to just waste time with their friends, you know? So like, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about like that distinction?
You know, it's fair. Like, every generation deserves like a stupid movie that isn't very good to just laugh about. You know, I trust me, I have plenty of those in my back pocket, you know, for rainy days. But like, I feel like I've just reached a point, especially because studios are not making the amount of comedies they used to, that if they're going to take the time to do it, I just want them to do it right.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I noted in the article where I wrote up the news story that at least the Scary Movie films presented opportunities to a bunch of now notable actors. I mean, Anna Faris, Regina Hall, Natasha Lyonne, Kevin Hart, Terry Crews. I mean, these are just a few of the people who came through those movies. And so I think the idea of resurrecting this franchise, at the very least, maybe it'll be an opportunity for the next class of sort of up and coming people to like maybe pop up in these types of films again before they blow up and go on to become, you know, bigger stars later on or whatever. So all right, let's take a break and then we'll come back. We have a few more news items to talk about.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
All right, Brad. Zack Snyder's at it again. I don't know if you saw this news story, but he wants
a new cut of Justice League.
Not Justice League this time, but he wants to fix Sucker Punch, the 2011 movie. He wants to, I guess, release the Sucker Punch cut, a new version of Sucker Punch. And he has said he has the footage already shot and he just needs the studio, I guess, to give him permission to put it together. He said, "We ask every now and then, we have to ask again. I think there has to be a window when no one's got the rights to the movie." So, you know, it's unclear exactly what he thinks he'll be able to improve. His other quote here is, "The only movie I would change is Sucker Punch because it never really got finished correctly. Even the director's cut is not really the correct cut. It's really just an extended version. If I had the chance, I would fix that movie." So, where are you on Sucker Punch these days? Is that a movie that you cared about when it came out? And sort of what is your, how does it linger in your mind now?
Yeah, honestly, I mostly like Sucker Punch. I think that it has a lot of fun visuals in it, as a lot of Zack Snyder's movies tend to. It has really cool action. It has a fantastic cast. But if anything, it is one of maybe the only Zack Snyder movie where I really felt like I wanted to see what his original version was, because it is very clear that there's a little more to the story that he didn't get to do. And it's been talked about over the years. And I would be interested in seeing what his definitive vision is. Having said that, knowing what it's been like when Zack Snyder has gone back to, quote unquote, fix things, it may not end up being for the best, even if I would like it to be. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, I would want to check out what that version of Sucker Punch would look like, just for, you know, the sake of being a completionist, I guess, because I did enjoy the original Sucker Punch, and I would be curious to see like what else there was that he wanted to do in that movie.
I remember being very mixed on it at the time, like thinking that the action was really cool, the slow-mo stuff. I mean, this was like still just a few years removed from 300, where Snyder really sort of like burst on the scene with that particular style that has gone on to sort of define the way that he makes movies. But I remember thinking like the story just left a lot to be desired. And I remember thinking the dialogue was awful. And like, it sort of seemed like he was trying to criticize the idea of like, fetishization of and like over sexualization of his female characters while also doing the same thing, you know, like creating visual scenarios where those characters felt that way too. So it sort of seemed like a movie that he was like, he had some ideas, and I think this was the first movie that he either wrote or co-wrote that was not based on something previously. So it sort of seemed like he had a lot of ideas that he wanted to push forward and like a statement that he wanted to make or something. But I just remember feeling like it was a little murky at the time whether or not he actually like achieved the message that he was really trying to put out there. So I wonder if this new footage might sort of clarify the messaging of the movie in any way. But yeah, I'm like, on the other hand, I'm kind of like loath to give in to Snyder, you know, once again going back to one of his movies and sort of potentially drumming up a, yet another campaign of like, you know, voices being like, he needs to, you know, give him the resources to do this. Like, there's so many, there's so much money that has already been allotted to Zack Snyder to fix things that like studios could have funded multiple other movies by now, you know, with that money. So I'm kind of like, all right, man, you made your thing, just like make peace with it and move on. And like, maybe the studios can give that money to other filmmakers to make new things that we can care about. But I don't know. I'm curious to see like how loud, how vocal the fandom will be on this one, because Sucker Punch is sort of like, I guess you could say, one of his lesser movies, or like lesser talked about movies anyway. So
yeah, how far will the loyalty of the Snyder Bros go?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I wanted to mention that Sonic the Hedgehog 3 has cast Keanu Reeves as the voice of Shadow. And a lot of people were making a big deal about this. I have no... I watched the Sonic animated series that was on in the 90s, Brad. I don't know. Did you ever watch that show?
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
Where like Sonic loved chili dogs and all that.
Love chili dogs.
And I played a few of the games on Sega Genesis, but I have not seen any of these new Sonic the Hedgehog films, even though I love Ben Schwartz, who voices Sonic, and Richard, what is his name? James Marsden, sorry, who was in the first movie at least. But I'm just like so out on the lore of Sonic the Hedgehog that I have no clue who Shadow is, but it seems like he's a really big deal. So I was curious if you knew anything about who Shadow is and when, what that lore is, if you're tapped into that world more than I am.
So I if I remember correctly, I believe he's kind of a villainous character. My experience with the later Sonic the Hedgehog games, where they started to introduce characters beyond Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles, is not very deep, because I just kind of stopped paying attention to them in a way. But like, I do know that there's like a girl hedgehog and Shadow and like a bunch of other characters that are now part of the mythology. And as I understand it, Shadow is a very cool character that fans like a lot. So casting someone like Keanu Reeves in that role is a pretty cool thing. So at the very least, it has me somewhat more interested in Sonic the Hedgehog 3 than I otherwise might have been.
Yeah. Do you think it's worth it for me to go back and watch Sonic and Sonic 2, these new movies? Did you enjoy those?
I mean, I don't know. You have a limited amount of time on your hands, Ben. they're fun to watch for the energy that Ben Schwartz brings to the table, and also watching Jim Carrey tap back into his totally unhinged comedic villain mode. But the story, you know, kind of leaves something to be desired. They're very much geared towards kids, but yeah, I don't know. It just depends on how valuable your time has been.
Okay, well, we'll see. If I end up watching them, I will definitely talk about it on an episode of The Water Cooler or something. So potentially stay tuned for that, but who knows. All right, last news story that I wanted to talk to you about today, Brad, is a Chris Farley biopic is actually in the works. And the lead actor has wanted this part for a long, long time. So Paul Walter Hauser is going to be playing Chris Farley in a new biopic. And it's based on a book called The Chris Farley Show, a biography in three acts by Tom Farley Jr., who is Chris's brother, and Tanner Colby. So this actually has like you know, some family involvement here. And I'm wondering what you think about this. I mean, I know that you're obviously like a big Chris Farley guy, and I think you're a big Paul Walter Hauser fan. Do you think that the casting is spot on here?
Yeah, I mean, Paul Walter Hauser is a very dedicated actor, and I feel like he's got a lot to prove still, or at least that he has a lot of opportunities that he would want to just show how good of an actor he is. He was fantastic in the Apple TV Plus series Blackbird with wow, I'm blanking on his name now.
The guy Taron from Edgerton. Kingsman. Yes, Taron Egerton. Yes.
He's incredible in that series, and I can just tell that he's got some Oscar-worthy performances in him. And he's also a big fan of comedy, and knowing that Chris Farley is like such a unique role that only somebody like with his personality and especially physique can tap into, I'm very excited to see what he can do with Chris Farley as a character, because obviously Chris Farley is best known for his, you know, big physical pratfalls and being, you know, a very, you know, loud, energetic presence on Saturday Night Live. But he was also, you know, a very complicated person who had a lot of demons, as, you know, we saw, because he got caught up in, you know, drug addiction and unfortunately led to his death. And having read the Chris Farley show, I can tell you there's just a lot of, you know, great things in there that Paul Walter Hauser can tap into, like to capture the nuances of Chris Farley, that to where this won't just be like a greatest hits of like watch Paul Walter Hauser do his best impression of, you know, Matt Foley or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Josh Gad is directing, I know he's another one who, like, he idolized Chris Farley growing up. He has a very, you know, intimate knowledge and love of Saturday Night Live. He actually even tweeted shortly after news broke about that SNL 1975 movie that Jason Reitman is working on, that he had read, like, the script and was, like, very excited to see how it works. So he knows a lot about the history of SNL. And so having someone like him tackle the material is also very enticing to me. So yeah, I'm fully on board, and I really can't wait to see what they can do with this. And if anyone out there is happens to listen to this and they want to do like a set visit or something like that, like give me a call or an email or something, because I would love to check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, the Josh Gad component is really interesting, because I think this is his feature directorial debut.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I got like really burned out on Josh Gad for a while there, because it seemed like he was in everything for like a 5-year stretch. And I was like, Jesus Christ, just enough with this guy. Like, it wasn't personal. It was just like, I'm kind of sick of, you know, sometimes that happens with actors where they just get like really, really overexposed. But he hasn't been nearly on, you know, in that sort of like public sphere in that same way for a long time. So like my feelings on him have cooled considerably. So I'm very curious to see what he does sort of behind the camera here. And then, yeah, Paul Walter Hauser, man, you mentioned the Apple TV Plus show Blackbird. He was also in season 2 of The After Party on Apple TV Plus, and he was doing some incredible physical comedy where it was just like laugh out loud, him like falling down through bushes and like stuff that describing it will just sound stupid, but in context is hilarious. So yeah, I feel like he would be actually a pretty great candidate to play Chris Farley here. And then we mentioned in that headline that he's been wanting to do this for a long time. I think it was in 2021 he went to the Hollywood Reporter and mentioned something about, like, I guess it was in the context of another interview, but he mentioned that he went to the Farley family and said that he had like asked permission to play Chris Farley. And his quote was, "I wanted to do a Chris Farley movie where he's in rehab for half of the film, and for the other half of the movie, he's doing his SNL stuff in his movies. I think I have a really great take on that story." So yeah, that goes to what you were suspecting about this, Brad, if it's not just going to be him walking through the motions of doing an impersonation for the SNL stuff. The rehab stuff should be an opportunity for Hauser to bring a little bit more of that dramatic heft to that performance. So
yeah,
should be pretty cool. So okay, I think that's gonna do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the news stories that we mentioned at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of them in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailback topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.